nightclubs like you can. We can't go to a shopping mall like you go to. So we're free of so many dangers. We are free of going into debt because we spend too much. We are free of falling in love with someone and, you know, having to be in prison for the next 20 years. We are free of having babies and crying all night. We always sleep peacefully, never being woken up in the middle of the night. So we're free from so many dangers. So if you may think, oh, you've got all these rules and things you have to live by, or you can't feel free at all. That's like saying the fish in the aquarium can't feel free. In fact, they are more free. That's why being a monk rocks. Being a nun is cool, isn't it? Yeah. Next question. Usually, if I meditate to whatever sitting meditation, I will fall asleep. But today, I don't sleep, but I always think of my family, friends, etc. I imagine their smiling faces happily all the time. I wish they are happy and healthy. Is it called praying or meditation? It depends. Sometimes when you're meditating, if you fall asleep, don't worry about that. It's because you are tired. And just don't fight it, just relax, and after a while all the sleepiness will vanish. Because there is one of the stories in the sutras which I always like to tell, to give some encouragement to all of you who fall asleep during meditation. The Buddha and Ananda were walking through the forest, and there they saw a monk meditating in full lotus, back perfectly straight, right hand over the left hand, thumb slightly touching, the chin tucked in slightly, the eyes closed but not too tightly, sitting perfectly still, meditating, hardly moving. And the Buddha looked to Ananda and said, I'm worried about him. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, that monk disrobed. The same day, in a different part of the forest, the Buddha and Ananda saw another monk meditating, nodding this way and nodding that way, half asleep. And the Buddha turned to Ananda and smiled. It's one of the cases where the Buddha smiled. And he said, I'm not worried about him. And 2 weeks later, that monk was fully enlightened with all the psychic powers. So whoever asked that question, just wait for 2 weeks. When I first read that, I thought something must be wrong. But now I understand what was going on. The first monk sitting perfectly straight was a control freak. He was using his willpower. Yeah, anyone can sit perfectly straight until your willpower runs out. But you don't get enlightened that way. The second monk was letting go. Yes, he was going through tiredness. But as I said this morning, don't fight the tiredness. Make peace with it. So the energy starts to not go into doing more things and fighting your sloth and torpor. Don't fight it. Just be peaceful. And all the energy will start going into mindfulness. And naturally you will wake up. You become very peaceful. And because you know how to let things be and not fight them, soon you get very peaceful, very deep. And you get very wonderful meditation. I know that's how it works. You fight. Yeah, you may go through the sloth and torpor, but you get restless afterwards. Because you've been fighting, been feeding the doer, the controller, the willpower. We're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to let go. And sloth and torpor vanish by itself. Once you've relaxed. And thinking about your family, friends, etc., their smiling faces, happily all the time. I wish they're happy and healthy. Great. Done that. Now go back to meditating. Because you wishing them to be happy and healthy, does that work? Are they happy and healthy because you wish them to be happy and healthy? Of course not. Because you haven't got any power yet. So if you want your family to be happy and healthy, then you stop thinking about them. And develop some power in your meditation. Really strong power. And at the end of the retreat, then you can think of your family and friends and zap them with all of your power. Now that might work. But you can't do anything without power, so you've got to build up some energy first of all. Dear Ajahn, can the body live without the mind? Very nice question. Basically, no. But it can appear that it's living simply because you have like artificial, artificial breathing and things keep the heart pumping. So it looks like a person is living, but basically the mind has gone. And this is what happens sometimes when people go in comas, in hospitals. And I think doctors are becoming much more sensitive. Like monks, we're sensitive enough. We can tell whether a person's there or not, or whether they've actually died. And that happened with, good or not here, this Vietnamese man, who he had a heart bypass, and you know, he didn't do very well, so he was in the ICU for about a week. And to this day, I don't know how I managed this. I went to see him about 3 times a day. Because the family would ring up and say he's going. And I'd go there and give him a big boost of energy. And he'd sort of come back again. And then he'd go again. And just, you know, he's on the edge of life and death. But when I do something, I really give everything I got to it. And I almost kept him going. And then I went there one day. And it was, you could feel it was totally different. He'd gone. He'd left. He died. You can actually feel a different change in him. And I sat next to him and said, waste of time chanting now, he's gone. And I always remember the doctor and nurse looking at me. Because, you know, their instruments, they knew he'd gone as well. So, you know, it's artificial, what's it called? Artificial life support, that's right, yeah. Artificial life support. And it appears like you're going, you know, you're alive. But really, sometimes it's just the person's gone already, they're dead. But sometimes you don't really know. Because this Dilbag here is not here today. He told me this story from his village, spooky story, that his auntie, this was in the Punjab in northwest India, one of his aunties died in the morning. A simple village. So, they were going to cremate her that evening. And so they laid her out, got all the wood together, arranged all the ceremonies. But late in the afternoon, she woke up. She came alive again and shocked everybody. And she told the story what had happened. Because she died. And these two spirits took her away to this big room where they saw this big chief spirit. And as soon as this big chief spirit saw her coming, the big spirit started scolding the smaller spirits. You've got the wrong woman. She's not supposed to die. Take her back. So they're embarrassed and they took her back and she woke up. And 1 hour later, another woman by the same name died. And she never came back. So the spirits had got the wrong woman. Same name, but you know, the wrong one. Because this was a village of Sikhs. And I think many of you know, all of the men are called Singh. And all the girls are called, women are called Dur, apparently. So they always have the same surname. So it must be a mistake which happens quite often. You may think this is funny, but it's actually a true story. Same person, so the same name, but wrong person. So she came alive again. So sometimes you think they're dead, but maybe they're not. And another spooky story. Here's another spooky story. The body living without the mind. There was a young boy. His elder sister, this was in a village in Thailand a long time ago. And actually it was Dio Yupa told this story. And the elder sister was washing, and her younger brother was playing, you know, just in the village lake, and fell in and went right down to the bottom, drowned. And the elder sister, maybe about 9 or 8 or 9 or something, ran to the village, you know, to get someone to help. And they were looking for the boy for hours, maybe 8 or 9 hours. They finally found him and dragged him out about 8 or 9 hours underwater and dragged him out. And they dragged him out feet first so the water could come out. And it was their custom, I don't know what they did next, but he came alive again after 8 or 9 hours. And that is now a famous monk in Thailand. It was actually Ajahn Sujata's teacher as well. And he said he remembers being dragged out of the lake, but he doesn't remember anything before then. All he remembers is this beautiful light and then being in this body and being dragged out. His first memory. And now he's a great monk. 8 or 9 hours without breathing. Impossible. There's many impossible things actually happen in our world. Who knows what's going to happen next? So that's what happens. Can a body live without the mind? Not for that long. Ajahn, I followed your retreat last year. And you're back again? You mean you weren't enlightened last year? You should ask for your money back. That'd be great, wouldn't it? You know, if you come on one of my retreats, if you don't get enlightened, you can ask for your money back. Shall we offer that, this retreat? No, I will offer that. I've got to be fair. Anyone who doesn't get enlightened on this retreat can ask for their money back. I promise you. You won't get it back, but you are allowed to ask. I should have been in business. I followed your retreat last year. My mind started getting more and more peaceful. However, I have doubts on the peace because I heard that Mara can take many forms, even becoming a false sense of peace. Oh no, Mara takes a form of controlling you. So if you're peaceful, that's wonderful. That's nothing bad. That's what's supposed to happen. So if you're peaceful, get more and more peaceful. That's not Mara. Please advise how not to have conceit or prevent getting fooled by such peace. Thank you. Don't get fooled by peace. You get fooled by the opposite. Doing stuff, thinking, that can fool you. You can think of all sorts of things, but peace and silence, that's where Mara can't go. Peace, silence, that is where you find truth. When the Buddha was under the Bodhi tree and Mara came to try and stop him getting enlightened, did Mara appear as peace? No! An army with all the elephants roaring and clashes of arms and shouting and lots of noise to try and disturb him. And that didn't work. So he got his beautiful daughters to do dancing in front of him. They weren't peaceful. So this is not the way you stop Buddhas becoming enlightened, by making you nice and peaceful. That's not Mara's work. That's the opposite. So if you're getting peaceful, that is not Mara. That's what's supposed to happen. So don't be afraid of peace. More and more and more peace. So don't be afraid of that. That's good. So get more. During these 2 days of meditation, there were times when it was really calm and peaceful. But it didn't last very long. What should I do, Ajahn? Nothing. Don't do anything. It was nice and calm and peaceful. Aren't you happy? There's many people here who'll be reading this and saying, oh, why did she get this and not me? I haven't been calm or peaceful at all. So you were calm and peaceful. Wonderful. Be so grateful. I got some peace and calm. That's so wonderful. That's enough for me. Because if you want some more, you don't get anything at all. So you're calm and peaceful. Enjoy it. And if you want it to come again, it never comes. But if you're content and don't worry, then it comes again and again and again and again and gets deeper and deeper. More and more, because you want something, you can't be peaceful. So instead, be content. Be grateful. Didn't last very long. How long is very long? Yeah. You only have a moment called now. So it was here in this moment. Wonderful. Just enjoy. Okay. You want to know what enlightenment is. Now I'm going to tell you what it's not. Because somebody asked me, can you tell us the story of when you became enlightened? Do you want to hear this one? Some of you have heard it before. 4 years I'd been a monk. And I was a good monk. I kept my rules and I meditated. I spent a lot of time by myself. And I went to this very simple monastery in a forest of the northeast. I didn't have nothing to do except very small chores, like a bit of sweeping for half an hour, and meditating and meditating and meditating. And because it was a rains retreat, this is the time. We don't go out anywhere, we stay in one place and really build up the energy and build it and build it. And one day my meditation was really hot, really easy to watch the breath and get into deep states of meditation. And one evening I didn't want to go to sleep, I was meditating, doing walking meditation. And my mind was so clear. Incredible mindfulness, and all these amazing insights were coming in one after the other. It was just you could understand everything. And then the big one came. Huge insight. Wow! That was it. I was enlightened. Another one of the arahats. Wow. And when you become enlightened, your mind is so blissed out, so wonderful. And I thought I should go back to have a sleep, because about 2 o'clock in the morning, we get up at 3 o'clock. So I went down, lay down 5 minutes. You're not tired at all. So I got up and went to the hall about half an hour before they rang the bell. And I was just sitting there. You have no effort at all. Your body is straight. Your mind is peaceful. You don't have to do anything. Your mind is just naturally just so still and peaceful. Now, these were the jungles of Thailand, really hot, and the rain retreat, really humid. And usually in the mornings, you know, you'd be slumped over, struggling to watch the best, but not this morning, the morning of my enlightenment. Wow. No sloth and torpor at all. No restlessness. Your mind was just so easy. It was so wonderful to become enlightened. Exactly. The problem was it didn't last that long. Because what happened after meditating and chanting? Now sometimes, you know, chant off key. This time the chanting was perfect tone. And it was just so sonorous and powerful coming from the deep inside of me. And after the chanting, we went on alms round in the village. And every person, these poor people, putting just a little bit of sticky rice in my bowl, I blasted them with loving kindness. They were so lucky to give the first meal to a new arahat, a new enlightened guru. They got so much metta and good karma from me. And when I got back to the monastery, because all we get on alms round is rice, maybe a banana, because the curry is usually cooked by the villagers who go there. And every day would be the same curry, which was rotten fish curry, pladek. And it really was rotten fish, because they would capture the fish from the paddy fields in the rainy season, put them in a jar, no salt or preservatives, put a bit of plastic on it and leave it for the 12 months until it, you know, just went off. It stank. And that's what we'd have every day. I love telling the story that when I was cleaning up around the kitchen, I found one of those jars and the plastic had got a hole in it and the flies got in there and there was maggots crawling all over it. So I went to throw it away when the headman of the village saw me and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Look, the maggots have got in, I'm throwing away." "What? You can't throw that away. Maggots mean extra protein." And that is what we ate the next morning. And if you think it sounds bad, it tastes much worse than it sounds, honestly. So rotten fish curry every day. But this morning, the morning of my enlightenment, I hadn't seen this before. Since the time I was at that monastery, there was another pot of curry there. And this was like a pork curry. This was like edible. And I thought, wow, the heavenly beings must also be celebrating my enlightenment by giving me something I can eat today. There was no vegetarian food, that was just it. I had pork curry today to celebrate my new status as arahat. And what happens is, we only had about 5 or 6 monks. The abbot, he takes his first and passed the pots down. And I was number two. So he took his first of all. Now, he was actually from that village. He grew up on rotten fish curry. That's, you know, his staple, his ordinary thing. But did he take any of the rotten fish? No. He took these huge ladlefuls of the pork curry. No one could even eat that much. About 2 or 3 whopping big ladlefuls. I didn't matter because there was lots in there. It was plenty for me. But what he did next? What he did next was unforgivable. Having taken 2 or 3 ladles himself of the pork curry, he took the rotten fish curry and poured it into the big pot of pork curry, stirred it up, and said, "It's all the same, it's all the same." And I thought, bloody hypocrite! If it was all the same, why did you take yours first before stirring it all together? Now you spoiled my celebratory meal because I'm enlightened. And I suddenly remembered, When you're enlightened, you don't care what you eat, and you certainly don't get angry. And I was angry. And I realized I wasn't enlightened after all. And if ever you thought you were enlightened and find you don't, that is one of the most depressing moments of your life. When I realized I wasn't enlightened, I didn't care what I ate. Slopped it in and passed it down. That was the time I got enlightened. It only lasted a few hours. It wasn't enlightenment after all. But it was close. And it was having rotten fish curry poured into the pork curry. Showed me that in arahats they don't have such preferences. And they certainly don't get angry at your rabbit. So I was. So I gave in. Okay, I wasn't enlightened after all. It was a good story. I found I wasted a lot of time on TV, internet and non-productive activities. I'm very much addicted to them. Please let me know how I can, how can I work with these habits. Thank you. Very easy. Get rid of your TV. Or even better, you know that sometimes I stay in hotels and there's big TVs there. And people ask me, do you watch the TV? Ajahn Brahma said, yes. I look at the TV screen. But the trick is, don't turn it on. Because if you look in the TV screen, because it's like a bit of glass, you can see a reflection of you. You can see who you are when you don't turn it on. So that's the best. So keep your TV, but don't turn it on. And when you go close, you can see this young man or young woman watching. Now that is meditation. Who is watching the TV? You can see it there. But when you turn it on, it's all gone. So that is the best way to watch the TV. The internet and non-productive activities. Yeah, you are wasting your time. How old are you? You're getting older and older and older. If you look in the distance, you can see your coffin coming closer and closer. The days and nights, not that much long for some of you. Sometimes I like to do this. There's about 60 or 70 people here this evening. According to statistics, between one and two of you are going to be dead by this time next year. Has to happen. You know, the death rate. So who is it going to be? And don't just look at the old ones. Young ones die too. So who is it going to be? He's not going to be here next year. Can you afford to waste the next year watching the internet? Watching TV and stupid... People watch stupid programs. It's okay to watch good things on the internet, like Ajahn Brahm's talks on YouTube. But not rubbish stuff. So, but people watch all these, they're supposed to be called reality TV shows. What people watch is absolutely rubbish. You know it's rubbish. So why do you do it? So, see if you can throw away your TV. Can you do that? You don't need a TV anymore. If you want the news, you can get the news on the internet. You don't need TVs anymore. And you can block out any sort of programs or whatever. Why not have a much more simple life? So that's what you can do. When you realize it's wasting your time, and it's a waste of money, and it doesn't do any good for you, then you can actually give it up. Dear Ajahn, how to conquer our dosa lobha mobha, greed, hate and delusion. How to increase our metta, karuna and mudita. Easily. Just meditate, sit down and shut up. Such an easy thing to do. The only way to overcome your anger and develop kindness is to have a calm mind with lots of mindfulness and lots of happiness. Follow these teachings, and it's very difficult to get angry. Somebody puts rotten fish curry in your vegetarian curry. What do you do? Bah! No, you say, okay, maybe the fish were vegetarians, so. But sometimes you've got no choice. If you've got a choice, you can just fast for the day or whatever. No need to get angry. If you get angry, you're allowing other people to control you, or the world to control you. Anger is the most stupid of emotions, getting angry. Because a lot of time, you never did anything wrong. That stupid person put the rotten fish curry in your vegetarian curry. That person banged the door. You never did anything wrong. Why are you suffering by getting angry? So I refuse to allow other people to make me angry. You can say stupid things, do stupid things, upset me, ask stupid questions, like this one. No, there's no stupid questions. But I refuse to get angry. I'm very stubborn. Be stubborn. Refuse to get angry. How do you define real? If you talk about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain. And what makes it real? That is a good question. And the answer is, when there are these five hindrances happening, then you don't see what's there, you see what you want to see. You don't hear what's there, you hear what you want to hear. You feel what you want to feel, and you know what you want to know. And the things which you don't like, you can't even see them or hear them or feel them. A good example is when you fall in love. If you go out with a nice girl or a nice boy, where do you go to fall in love? You go to romantic places. What's a romantic place? A walk under the moonlight, a candlelit dinner for two, or in a nightclub. Now, the thing which those three places have in common are they are all dark. So you can't really see what you're falling in love with. No one would fall in love during the middle of the day in the bright sunlight. Because when it's dark, candlelight, that fat, plain old lady in front of you can look like Angelina Jolie. That small, weak man can look like Bruce Willis. Because in the dark, it gives your perception the freedom to fantasize and make this person you want to fall in love with look like something they never can be. So we see what we want to see. And when they fall in love, oh, this girl is so beautiful, she's so wonderful. He, oh, is just, I'm so lucky to have him as my boyfriend. 5 years later, 10 years later, why did I marry her? Why did I allow him to make me do this? Because when you get upset at a person, you can't see anything beautiful there at all. You just see the faults. It's the same boy, the same girl. Why is it when we fall in love, we can only see the beautiful side? And why is it when we get divorced or want to separate, we can only see the bad side? Both sides were there from the very beginning. They're there at the end too. But we choose to see what we want to see. We hear what we want to hear. That's the problem. Because of desire or ill will, otherwise called denial, we bend the truth so we can see what we want to see. And we don't want to see what we don't like to see, what challenges us. That is the problem. So the only way to trust you know, what is real. It's only when your five hindrances have been subdued. So there's no desire left. So you see what's there. Not what you want to see, but what's there. You don't have any ill will anymore. So you're not just fault-finding, you're actually seeing the whole picture. Remember when I had a fault-finding mind, I could only see two bad bricks in the wall. I just couldn't see other bricks because I was negative. So if you're negative, you can only see the faults in things. So when that negativity has gone, then you can see the whole picture. Those two of the first hindrances are roughly the big things which stop you seeing the truth. You don't see the truth, you see what you want to see. You will refuse to see what challenges you. And sloth and torpor, you're too dull to see. Your mindfulness is not strong enough. Restlessness, you don't stay long enough with something to be able to understand it. And lastly, doubt. Doubt is another form of restlessness. You see something, is that true? And you just spoil it by commenting and just doubting. But those five hindrances are what stop people seeing things as they truly are. Stop us seeing what's real. It's one of the reasons why people think TV is fun. Is it? Afterwards, drugs are fun, are they? How much money do you need? You got enough? Hands up if you've got enough money. Great, okay. Donation box is over there. That's a trick to get you to donate more. No, a lot of times, it doesn't matter, we can always do with some more. So just wanting. So when the five hindrances disappear, then what we can see, we can trust. And how do the five hindrances disappear? Through these deep meditations. And you hear me talk later on about the jhanas. It's only after you've got into a jhana, when you emerge afterwards, only then the five hindrances are totally abandoned for a long time. And you're clear. So any insights which happen before jhanas, you don't really know whether it's bending the truth or whether it's real or not. But if it comes after a jhana, the five hindrances are gone. That you can trust. So when the five hindrances are gone, then you can trust that this is real. That's a very nice question. When I am in an environment that I'm not familiar with, I am aware I have anxiety. How do I overcome that? This is even more difficult for me in retreat. Because you have to have faith in, say, me, because many of you are familiar with me. Do you trust me? Have I ever let you down? So, you are safe in this retreat. Totally safe. So, first of all, you have to have faith in the teacher. Number two, have faith in the teachings. So, this path, which you can read about, from 2,500 years ago, leads to peace and happiness and health, and leads to only good things. And you've probably seen other people who've been on retreats before. They're having a good time. They've got nothing to worry about. They're perfectly safe. So that, you know, seeing other people, have faith in the teacher, faith in the teachings, faith in experience. And then you find, what am I anxious for? You don't need to be anxious. And especially a retreat like this, this is soft teddy bear retreat. These teddy bears, is this teddy bear anxious? Are you anxious? No. So anyone who's anxious, take a teddy bear and learn how to stop being afraid. By teddy bears aren't afraid. In other words, sort of anxiety can sometimes be projecting onto the future something which will never happen. And sometimes it becomes just a bad habit. So instead of thinking about the things which will go wrong, think about all the things which will go right. You've been here 2 or 3 days already. Has anything gone wrong? No, it's wonderful, very peaceful. So that way, after a while, you may not be familiar with the place, but you trust a place and trust the teacher. So see if you could overcome the anxiety with some trust. Last questions. Could you please tell us some when I was a young monk stories? Do you want to hear any more of those? Because these monks have heard it so many times. When I was a young monk, we didn't have breakfast. Or some recollection of Ajahn Chah's. It seems that teddy bears are multiplying. I thought everyone was on 8 precepts. Yeah, what are you guys doing at night time when everyone's gone? No, we've only got the 4 teddy bears. They were, 3 were here at the beginning, and one was brought from, was it Indonesia or Hong Kong? Indonesia, one was brought from Indonesia. So that's where they came from. People do keep 8 precepts here. So, some stories when I was a young monk with Ajahn Chah. Okay. He once, this is with for your anxiety and worry problem. He once, I'll use this one here. When I was coming back on arms round, Ajahn Chah picked up a stick from the forest and he asked me, Brahma Wangso, that's the full name. Brahma Wangso, is this stick heavy? Before I could answer, he threw it away. And he says, it's only heavy when you hold it. When you let it go, it's no weight at all. I thought, wow, what a great teaching that is. Is your life heavy? Your finances, your health, your relationships, your job, is that heavy? Is that worrying you? Is that a burden? It's only heavy when you hold it. When you throw it away, it's not heavy at all. So, beautiful teaching of Ajahn Chah. Practical. So, whatever anxieties and worries you have, you can get one of these pieces of paper and write all the anxieties and worries on the piece of paper. Once you've written it there, get a stick from the forest and a couple of elastic bands. Wrap all your worries around the stick and then throw it off into the forest. And with it, throw all your worries away. Because all your worries, they're only heavy when you hold them. That is the problem of human beings. We hold things for too long. So can you do that? Maybe. There'll be so many sticks and bits of paper in the forest. People making a mess of our beautiful environment. But doesn't matter. So that's actually one of the nice stories. Ajahn Chah was always practical like that. Always said things which made a lot of sense. The other one, which somebody mentioned the other day to me, he said, this cup, he would hold up his cup and he said, can you see the crack in it? I'd look. I can't see any crack. And I thought Ajahn Chah was cracked. Crack means a bit funny. And then he'd say, yes, you cannot see it because it's microscopic. But it's there. Because one day, someone will drop this cup and it will fall over and the crack will open up and the cup will break. It's fragile. And he said, if this cup was made out of plastic, you could kick it, you drop it, won't have a crack in it. If it's plastic, it would last forever. If it was plastic, you wouldn't have to look after it and care for it. But because it's got a crack in it, that's why we must care for it. And each one of you are cracked. You've got a crack in you, and one day that will open up and you will die. You're fragile. You're impermanent. You're only temporary residence in this world. Because of that, that's why you must care. Your mother, your father, your friends, they're all cracked. Your monks, your nuns, we're cracked too. One day we will die. That is why we must care. If it were plastic, if you were going to last forever, you wouldn't need to care. But because it's fragile, that is why we must care. That's why we have to have compassion. Because we're all cracked. So those are two stories from Ajahn Chah. Simple, but very profound. One last one? Okay, one last one before you go to bed. A husband came to the temple late at night. He had a big argument with his wife. And his wife had thrown him out of the house. He didn't have anywhere else to go but the temple. And he told the monk, said, I said some terrible things to my wife. I love her, but you know what people are like. We say terrible things to the ones we love. So what can I do? To mend the problem. And the monk said, if you've had an argument with your wife and you said terrible things to her, you must do the Buddhist chicken ceremony. Do you know the chicken ceremony in Buddhism? This man didn't know either. What is the chicken ceremony? So the monk said, well, first we need a chicken. So he said, it's still time. Go to the market and get me a chicken. So he ran to the market, a dead chicken, but the monk said, on the way back, to save time, pluck the feathers from the chicken, so bring me the chicken already plucked. So he ran to the market, managed to get a chicken from the store before it closed, a dead chicken. And then as he went back to the temple, he plucked all the feathers out, so when he got to the temple, it was all plucked. And the monk said, thank you very much, put it in the freezer, now you can go to bed. Because it's too late now. Tomorrow morning, you can do part two of the chicken ceremony. And so he had a nice sleep, and in the morning, the monk got the chicken out from the freezer, thawed it out, and told the man, now, retrace your steps back to the marketplace. Find all the feathers you plucked out the night before, and stick them back in the chicken where they came from. And he said, I can't do that. I probably won't even be able to find all the feathers, especially stick it back in again, because once those feathers are out, they're out. Exactly, said the monk. That is the meaning of the chicken ceremony. Once you take the feather out of the chicken, you can't put it back again. Once the words come out of your mouth, you can't even find where they've gone, let alone stick them back in your mouth again. So be careful, like plucking a feather out of a chicken. Once it's out, and can never be put back again. Once words come out of your mouth, they can never be captured and put in again. Once they're out. So be very careful what you say. Even in anger, be careful, because once they're out, they can't be put back in again. That's a wonderful story from Ajahn Chah about the chicken ceremony. Okay, that's enough for tonight. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Okay, but remember, once it's out of your mouth, you can't put it back in again.
We find the ring outside the meditation door here, of that. So if you see the door, you
can come to me,
and I will keep it throughout the whole
retreat. Okay. Anyone who's lost the ring.
Yeah, no, it's real. Huh? And, real. What is real? Yes.
Thank you.